Welcome to episode 7 of npmom.com, titled The Arrival of Our Miracles. Thank you for joining me on npmom.com. I hope everyone has had a great week, and thank you for returning to listen for another episode of npmom.com. Today's podcast is going to take you down my journey from the moment I was induced to the moment I heard my baby's cry for the first time. I have to say, my husband was great in capturing all the events via video camera and pictures. It was a great idea on his part, because they've been my keepsakes and I refer back to them every so often. I would highly recommend that bringing along a camera or a phone with you to hone in on these precious moments. I'm going to spice things up and I'm going to do things a little bit backwards today, but I actually wanted to give you guys a little bit of a snippet video of our son, who was twin A when he was born. My husband was able to successfully videotape him, and I just wanted you guys to kind of hear what the scenario looked like and how busy it was in the OR room where I delivered. So here you go.
There we go. So if you notice, his color is changing quite a bit. He's getting pinker and pinker, which is exactly what we want. Not having any trouble with his breathing, which is great. Just going to put a hat onto his head.
Okay.
And his cord's already been trimmed. 7, 9, 6. Yeah. Okay. So we know he's twin. Put these bracelets on.
I have something on my hand too that I was given.
You'll get a new one now.
Oh, okay.
Oh no, maybe those are the.
Oh, was it?
Maybe.
Were they on? On it. And we'll just check his weight too.
Okay.
So I just want to confirm with you mom is registered under this last name.
That is
in
correct.
The hospital.
That is correct.
And it is twin A.
That is right.
Okay.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that clip. Of course, it means so much more to me than it would to you, because that was literally the delivery of my firstborn. And honestly, it just, I can't put into words unless you go through it yourself. It's really an unbelievable experience, which is essentially what this podcast is going to kind of walk you guys through. I was given the call for the induction from the hospital at 11 o'clock in the morning. And because we had the baby bag and the hospital bag already in the car, it was essentially just a matter of my husband and I getting ready and really just hopping into the car and making our way there. Now, for all those new listeners, you can refer to my list of items for the hospital bag and the baby bag on my last week's podcast. And that can be found at www.npmom.com/episode6. Now, the induction process, I should tell you, is rather lengthy. I don't know if I really necessarily factored in how much time it was going to be, but it is a very lengthy process. At first, when I got there at the hospital, I was asked a spool full of questions. Those questions were specific to my pregnancy, how far along I was, who my obstetrician was. And then finally, once they had gotten the answers that they were needing, I was brought into a room, and that's where I was asked to pretty much get into a hospital gown, and that was where the process was going to start. The doctor that I met with was actually, she is a gynecologist obstetrician, but she was kind of a random person. It was the first time I was seeing her. So she introduced herself, and she kind of walked me through the process of what exactly induction was going to look like. It was very soon after that that she had inserted a vaginal insert. It's called Cervidil. Now, for those that don't know what Cervidil is, it's actually a vaginal insert, like I had mentioned, and it's actually used in ripening the cervix. What I mean by ripening is essentially thinning and softening the cervix. It's essentially trying to get the cervix ready for delivery and kind of ripening it. It's a prostaglandin, which is used to help induce labor. So when the cervix is not ready to respond to contractions, this is the reason why the cervidil is inserted. One thing to note is that the first 2 hours after it's been inserted, you're not allowed to walk around. It's highly recommended that you stay on your back and that you're just closely monitored. So when the cervidil was inserted for the first 2 hours, I was essentially bedridden and I had the fetal monitors on, and it was just more or less a waiting game at that point. After the 2 hour period, they recommend that you walk around and they try to help. They tell us that it actually helps with the whole induction process. Once the cervidil was inserted and the 2 hour period had elapsed, I was given the green light to move into the antenatal unit. So this is where women who are pregnant and have not had their children yet more or less stay. And this was pretty much where I spent most of my time in the hospital. Cervidil, I didn't realize, but it did take me several hours before anything took place. So walking around was really encouraged on that unit. They didn't really want to see anybody lying in the bed for very long. I would occasionally be hooked up to a monitor to see how the little ones were reacting to the cervidil, and every so often I was also internally examined to see whether or not the cervidil was doing what it should be. The process was really slow. It was steady, and eventually, I would say about 12 hours later, the cervidil had been, the 12 hours after the cervidil had been inserted, I was re-examined one last time, and this was pretty much just to confirm that the cervidil was actually ripening and softening and thinning the cervix so that it would help to initiate the whole dilatation process. So after that, I was put on a IV drip. I was given Ringer's lactate, which is a IV fluid that has a lot of electrolytes. It actually is specific for pregnant women. It does have the electrolytes that we need. It also has some of the properties that a woman needs in order to induce labor. And on top of that, I was given a medication called Pitocin. Pitocin is also known as oxytocin, so you may be hearing those terms interchangeably. They're the same product, it's just a different name. And really what the Pitocin or the oxytocin does is it stimulates the uterus to begin contracting. The dose does vary from one woman to another. So I have done rotations in labor and delivery where we haven't really needed to give much Pitocin to females. Sometimes females don't even need the Pitocin, the contractions to start. So it really does vary from person to person. And I'm going to be honest with you, it was kind of a blur to me as to when the Pitocin was started, what the dose was. So I have absolutely no idea where I was as far as dosing goes. I do know that I was given some of it, and I want to say it wasn't a lot. But I know that eventually, once the Pitocin started to work, what it does is it contracts the uterus. So it pretty much initiates contractions. So it's falsely giving your body the impression that it's going into labor. And that's really what the whole purpose of Pitocin is. So I know that it did definitely do the job, because I did start feeling the contractions a lot more. And I want to say that it was probably within 3 to 4 hours of getting that drip going that I started to feel the contractions. The contractions were pretty, you know, sort of, they were steady. They kind of came and went. But they didn't really, they still wanted, whether I had the IV pull with me or not, they still wanted me to walk around and they still wanted me to kind of help with that process. So I did that walking around. My husband was right beside me. And of course, as you walk around, the more that you walk around, the more pressure you're feeling down there, and the contractions are getting more intense and things like that. So it is quite the process and it is quite the experience. I was, every 2 hours, I know that the nurse had specifically told me to come back into the room if I wasn't already in the room, because she wanted to hook me back up on the fetal monitors and she wanted to take my blood pressure to see if everything was going as it should. So I was only on the machines for like 4 minutes at a time every 2 hours. And that was literally just to kind of give them a ballpark of where I was with things. Apart from that, the nurses, like I had mentioned, they didn't really want to see me laying around. They wanted me sitting and or walking around. And as the contraction started to grow, I was asked to go to my last stop, which was a labor and delivery unit. Now, before that happened, I kept telling the nurse that I felt the contractions. I kept feeling them, and I told her I felt like they were coming very frequently, but for some reason, I don't think she believed me. And I think she thought, oh, well, maybe they're coming, but they're not as intense as what I felt I was feeling. So just be mindful. And if you're ever in that situation where you feel like the nurse and you aren't just not seeing eye to eye, you know, really advocate for yourself, because you don't want to be put in the predicament where, let's say, you do want to be provided with epidural and it's too late. Because trust me, I've heard those horror stories too. So it's funny because when I was finally put on the machine in the labor and delivery room, that's where pretty much they said, you're not going to be bed, like you're not allowed to walk around. You're going to be bedridden and you're going to be on the machine more or less. And at that point, my husband was telling me, I think I had been laboring from that point for about 25 hours at that point. So when I finally had gotten to the labor and delivery room where I was bedridden, I was permanently hooked up to monitors. That's when the nurse had looked at the contractions and she was like, oh my gosh, you're contracting every 2 minutes and they're really intense and they're really long. And I said, I know, I've been trying to tell the nurse at the other unit that I was in a lot of discomfort, but I don't know if she just didn't see it on the machine. Like, I don't know. So anyway, needless to say, at this point, I had asked if it was possible for me to get epidural because I was feeling the intensity. And, you know, if you're not able to walk around and move around, it's really hard to start, you know, to kind of stay in a bed and try to breathe through these contractions. At least it was for me. So at that point, I was given the epidural. Now, it's a funny story because I was told that the anesthesiologist, who is the only one person that's certified and qualified to give the epidural, she was actually in the emergency department, and I was told it was going to be like 25 minutes or 15 minutes before she got here. So in my mind, because I work in the medical profession, I had equated that to another hour. So also keep that in mind too. When they say 15 minutes, I'm sorry to tell you, but it doesn't always equate to 15 minutes. Now, to my surprise, I don't know if it was because I was laboring and delivering, you know, naturally with twins, that she had pity on me, but the 15 minutes actually ended up being like 10 minutes. So she literally did come up, and I remember even saying to the doctor, wow, that was the quickest 15 minutes of my life. And she says, well, I heard about your story and I kind of wanted to be here before I got caught up in other things in the emergency. So that was really nice. And as soon as I was given that epidural, I got to tell you, it was a godsend. Whoever made that medication really knew what they were doing. My husband tells me, like I said, before the epidural was inserted, that I was probably laboring for about 25 hours at this point. Now, my active labor, which is the actual pushing and you know, literally having the babies come out, was probably around 2 hours in total, I want to say. And that happened in the OR room. Now, at shift change, while I was still in the labor and delivery room, so this was before I even delivered, I was assigned a new nurse because, of course, I had been at this, you know, at this hospital for more than 24 hours. So nurses' shifts are normally 12 hours or sometimes they're 8 hours. So I was assigned this new nurse, and I remember even jokingly saying to my husband, you know, what are the odds that I'm at a Toronto hospital? I went to school in Toronto. I did nursing. What are the odds that I'm actually going to find a nurse here? And she's going to be like a colleague of mine from school. So we laughed about it, thought it was hilarious. And that's exactly what happened. So I was pretty embarrassed, not going to lie. But I got over that really fast. The nurse was, she was really, really great. She had told me, listen, when I'm like, I've been there, done that. You know, at this point, I'm just looking out for you and your babies. So she was really, really great. You could tell she was very seasoned and she knew what she was doing. So she had actually mentioned to me that because I was having multiples that I would be sent to the OR room. That, you know, that the team that was going to be there was going to be consisting of the neonatal intensive care team. It was obviously going to have the obstetrician, the anesthesiologist, of course, to monitor and make sure that the epidural was doing what it should be. And of course, the nurses would be in the room. So in other words, pretty much everybody under the sun was going to be in that OR room. She had also mentioned that the bed in the OR room was going to be small and that she preferred that I begin to push when I felt the pressure in the actual labor room that I was in because there was more space and more room. And she says, once I started to crown, now that term crown essentially means once I would push and they could see the head of the first baby, twin A, that's when she would say, okay, that's giving me my green light to send you over to the OR room. Because pretty much once you start crowning, it's not too much later that the baby comes out. So it's funny because when she told me, she said, whenever you feel like you need to push, go ahead. And I started feeling the pressure. I started feeling that lower sort of back pressure. I know some women, it's a little funny and odd for me to say this, but it really does sort of depict what you feel. But it's almost like you get that pressure in your buttocks, like as though you're going to have a bowel movement, but you know you're not going to have a bowel movement. So you're not going to have any accidents, but you just feel that pressure in your bum. And at this point, I have epidural, so it's literally just pressure. It's not pain anymore. So once I started feeling that pressure, I had told my nurse that I wanted to push. And I'm not even lying. I pushed maybe a total of 3 times and she told me to stop. She said, okay, you're crowning. My husband was actually able to see our son's head of hair. And she said, I need you to stop pushing because I didn't think it was going to happen this quick. You're really doing well with the pushing. And I think we need to send you over to the OR room. So once I was in the OR room, I did meet with the whole world, like I had mentioned, and I met the obstetrician. So let me tell you something that I learned. When I had asked my obstetrician for the next date for induction, I had specifically asked when he was going to be on call, not realizing that on call is actually 24 hours. So if we do our math properly, you'd realize that I was already laboring from start to finish for at least 27 hours. So at this point, my obstetrician had left. I really think I saw him maybe once. I think he came in just to check in and see how things were going. But I was left in the hands of somebody else that I didn't really know. So just keep that in mind if you're ever looking for, you know, wanting that obstetrician to deliver your child, you want to factor in the amount of time it's going to take to labor. Now, with that being said, some women labor for 3 hours, so like from start to finish. So it's really hard to gauge that. So I actually ended up becoming really lucky because, of course, I was a little bit antsy and so was my husband because we had developed this great relationship with our obstetrician and we felt very comfortable with him delivering our children. But when I found out that he had already come and gone, I was like, oh my gosh, whose hands am I going to be left in? I actually ended up having the same obstetrician that delivered my twin nephews. So I don't know, it was just sort of fate, meant to be sort of deal. Now, I don't think he knows that he delivered my nephews, but I know he delivered my nephews and I know he did a phenomenal job with my sister. So I felt really comfortable. And when my husband, who is the Google master, I want to call him, Googled him, he's actually the chief and he specifies in multiple pregnancies. So I had the best of the best, if you ask me. I had the cream of the crop. And to be honest with you, I don't think I can get any better than that. So I felt very, very secure, very sort of safe in his arms. So now for the fun stuff, the active labor. So it was quite the experience. And I'm not going to lie when I say this, it literally felt like it was 5 minutes and that the babies were out. It happened really quick. I don't know if it was because I was focusing during the whole process. My focus was obviously making sure that the babies came out and were safe and healthy and whatnot. But I found myself praying a lot during the whole process. Now, I wouldn't say I'm an overly religious person, but I'm definitely spiritual. And during that whole process, because it had taken my husband and I quite some time to get pregnant and go through this whole process, all I kept doing was just praying that everything goes well and that my children are born, you know, healthy and everything just goes well. So, I wasn't like the typical women that you see on the TV screaming my head off and, you know, yelling at the top of my lungs or cursing at my husband for putting me in this situation. It was nothing like that. I actually embraced the situation and I have to say I kind of enjoyed it. I know that sounds really twisted. But in hindsight, when I look back, I really did enjoy the labor process. I was really proud of the way I dealt with it. My husband didn't really say much about that process, but I want to say that I kind of held it together pretty good considering the amount of pressure and the amount of pain before the epidural that I had, and considering I was carrying multiples. So of course the pressure and the pain is I want to say intensified double, right? I also have another confession. During that active part of the labor, I never told my husband, but I was scared. I was really scared because I didn't take any prenatal classes. And this whole time when my husband and I were looking online for the prenatal classes, they were all booked up. People book these prenatal classes months and months and months in advance. Like literally the moment they find out that they're pregnant, they book their prenatal classes. That's how far in advance. So at this point, there was no hope in hell. We were not going to get into a prenatal class. So when I was 30 some odd weeks, I was like, all right, well, I guess it's just up to me. And as much as the prenatal classes are great, and they're definitely something that if you have the luxury of going to them, definitely consider them. But I do want to give you sort of the other end of the spectrum in telling you that if you don't go to them, or if you can't go to them because of the situation similar to me, that, you know, it was just too late, don't feel like you've missed out completely. Because in my experience specifically, it was almost like there was like this innate behavior inside of me and I just knew exactly what to do. I knew exactly how to breathe. I knew exactly how to push. Nobody taught me, but it was just something that you just knew how to do. So I don't know if there's a lot of videos and movies and me being the medical profession and seeing, you know, my rotations of labor and delivery that I just learned this, but I don't really think that that's the case. I think it just had to do with the fact that it just comes from within and you'll just know exactly what to do. So again, I pushed for a few minutes and out came my son. So he was twin A, as you had heard on the video, and he was crying as you heard, and he was doing all the great things that any newborn would do. Daddy went running over to see his son and even took a picture of him to show me. And then came time for my daughter, who was twin B, to enter the world. So because both babies were head down, I was fortunate enough to be able to deliver them both vaginally. And that was actually the plan. Now, my daughter decided to spice things up. And once her brother had entered the world, she had all this room and she went from head down to feet down. So she literally flipped. So she was no longer head down, which would have made the delivery process obviously a lot worse and a lot more difficult. So all I remember was the obstetrician saying, okay, can somebody go and scrub in? And now because I'm in the medical profession, I know what that translates to. And that essentially means C-section time. And I was really upset because I thought, oh, I delivered one way. Now I have to deliver another way. Now, when I say that, it's just a personal preference. C-sections are not necessarily, you know, worse than vaginal deliveries. It was just my own personal preference. I really did want a vaginal delivery. I can tell you from my own experience, I don't know if it was just the way I heal, but the vaginal delivery was, you know, it was traumatic, because I'll get into that in a few minutes, but the healing process is definitely a lot less longer than having abdominal, you know, the C-section, because that's an abdominal surgery. And, they have to go, you know, they have to cut through your skin, through your muscles and all that stuff. But again, if that's what I needed to do to have my daughter safely enter the world and be healthy, I was going to be okay with it. It was, you know, a no-brainer at that point. Now, I remember looking at my husband and saying, oh, it looks like we're going to have to do a C-section. And I guess the obstetrician had heard me say that. And because I was in the greatest hands ever, he was actually able to prevent a C-section from happening. Now, I want to tell you that if there was any other obstetrician, I would even argue even if it was my own obstetrician, I think I would have had to deliver my daughter by C-section. But because I was in his hands, like I said again, it must have been fate. It was great luck on my end, but he was able to really manipulate her and he was able to actually deliver her vaginally for me. Now, the delivery was traumatic. My daughter, when she was delivered, she didn't give that beautiful cry that we had heard my son do. She was actually quite flaccid and she was pale. So I was petrified and I remember actually sitting up and saying, "Is she okay? Is she okay? How come she's not crying?" And then I started to cry because I thought, oh my God, I should have just done the C-section. What the hell was I thinking? Luckily, because I was in a very great hospital and I was with a really great team, my daughter was able to, she essentially needed oxygen. So the neonatal intensive care unit, that's, you know, they're there, they were prepared to do this. And they gave her CPAP, which is oxygen. And within, I want to say even less than a minute, she pinked right up and that beautiful cry was heard. So she was fine, thankfully. Because of the traumatic delivery with our daughter, Sats was unfortunately not able to capture any of the delivery pictures. But she was healthy and she was safe. And honestly, that's all that we wanted. And that's all that mattered at that point for us. After we had delivered the babies, we were brought into our new unit, which was essentially our final destination, and that was the maternity unit. It was a lot smaller of a room. Even though I had private coverage, the room was really tiny. It was a lot smaller of a room. And of course, this is when all the visitors wanted to come and see the babies. So I had been given morphine because of what damage and the trauma that had happened to me in order to deliver my daughter. So I didn't realize this. I thought I was keeping it together. But in fact, I don't think I really was much company. I would argue that if you want to have visitors, depending on how well you do, I mean, if you have a really uneventful labor and you feel up for visitors, then go for it. In my situation, if I could change things, I would have had the visitors come possibly even the next day. We delivered our children in the afternoonish. And I still, near the evening, still felt very doped up. It makes sense because I was on morphine and I was on quite a bit of it because of everything that I had to deal with myself. But I just kind of felt like it was a bit too much and I didn't really have that opportunity to bond with my children or to even like let things soak in because everything is so fast forward when you're in it that you don't realize what is going on and you just don't get that chance to kind of soak it all in. So that's just kind of a tidbit sort of suggestion on my end. Again, it's personal preference. If you feel great, then you know what? Go for it. My siblings also had said that they only stayed for about an hour, if that. And the reason was because I guess I was falling asleep in between the conversations and I didn't realize that. So they just kind of felt really bad that they even did that, like even came to see me. The next day, I can tell you that I felt so much better. I felt a lot more alert and orientated. The morphine drip at this point was actually stopped. I don't remember for how long I was on it, but I know I was on it for a good couple hours, at least after the procedure was done. And I felt really great, good enough to even shower and kind of, you know, liven up a bit. So this was, I would say, probably more of an ideal time to have visitors because at this point you've had your sleep, your medication and all that stuff. Like it's a big experience. I don't know if anybody really understands it unless you go through it yourself, but it's a huge experience and there's a lot that comes with it. And there's a lot that you have to go through and to sit there and have people, you know, wanting to talk and ask, you know, how the experience was. Like sometimes you just don't want to do that at that point. And that's where I was at. Now, for those that are following my podcast, I had mentioned a while ago that I had swelling in my legs. So I thought it was going to be a quick fix. I've delivered the children. The water should essentially be coming off, right? Well, no, I still felt like there was 10 pounds each on each leg. So I was still retaining a lot of fluid. Now, I will tell you, thankfully, within about 5 days after delivery, I did lose a lot of that water and literally was in the bathroom like every minute sometimes. Now, as I speak about my experience, I feel like I'm going through it all over again and I'm reliving it. It's amazing how life is made, and what's even more amazing is a woman's body. To be able to carry for 9 months and then deliver a human being, it's just utterly amazing. I know I've mentioned this several times in my previous podcasts, but I actually thoroughly enjoyed my pregnancy. And like I said, I even actually enjoyed the labor process. I know it sounds absurd, but really, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I had a focus, and that focus was to have these miracles in my arms, and honestly, they got me through it all. In hindsight, when I look back, although my husband told me it was 27 hours of labor, I really can't wrap my head around it being that long. It really didn't feel that bad. I often thought to myself, labor couldn't be that bad because women go back and do it all over again and again and again. And I'm here to tell you all the same thing. If I had to do it all over again, I would. It was a great experience and something only if you go through it yourself will you truly value its meaning. So that was my labor and delivery experience and journey. I thank you all for allowing me to share it with you guys. On next week's podcast, I'm going to speak about the first few weeks of being a mom. I will speak more specifically to the new mothers and the soon-to-be mothers out there that have anxiety with how things will be at home once you're left alone with your bundle of joy. I'll also speak to some of the tips that I came across during the early days and how they helped me get into a routine a lot quicker than expected. As always, please do not hesitate to leave me emails, questions, or comments on my site at www.mpmom.com. Until next week, stay healthy and stay hopeful.